what's really going on in America. And what are we going to talk about today, William?
Well, thank you, Dr. Stan. I think what we need to talk about would be this growing and very troubling reality that our communities, our towns and states, are riven with people who are working in the employ of the federal government in various ways.
Some of them are informers, then?
Informants and provocateurs, and these are people who often are criminals who have either committed offenses that are nominally illegal, which is to say things that are criminalized by the criminal code but are not necessarily offenses against persons and property, or in some cases they've actually committed what we'd have to consider to be mala in se, that is to say things that are offenses against persons and property. Often they're drug offenders. I am of the opinion that while we should do everything we can to discourage narcotics use, that it really is spectacularly pointless, futile, and destructive to be carrying on this federal war on drugs, because it's amounted to a war on rights. What happens is that you get people who are criminally inclined to do things apart from peddling drugs. They steal, they commit strong-arm robbery, they threaten people with violence, they carry out physical violence against people who are also in the business of dealing drugs. And often when they are captured and faced with prosecution, they are turned by the feds so that they become informants, and often they're in the employ of joint counter-narcotics task forces that are little units that combine the efforts of state and local law enforcement with people from the Drug Enforcement Administration, or sometimes even from the FBI. And, of course, the U.S. attorney or an assistant U.S. attorney is always part of this mechanism as well. And in order to get what's called a downward departure from the mandatory minimum sentence under federal statutes, these people will go out and become informants. And the business of being an informant is not the same as being an eyewitness, somebody who is being run to collect evidence, which is used to help build a case or to point investigators in the right direction to find corroborating evidence. The business of being an informant today is the business of accusing people for hire in exchange for some kind of consideration. And often the word, the solitary, unsubstantiated, uncorroborated word of a criminal employed by the federal government is sufficient either to obtain a conviction in a federal jury of somebody who may be completely innocent of the charges against him, or to compel that defendant to accept a plea bargain arrangement that would amount to a very brief but painful sentence behind bars, and then probation and a number of other things that would be impositions on that person of some duration. 95% of the cases that go before a federal jury end in conviction. And of the cases that are built that don't go to jury, we see that the majority of cases that involve an informant don't even go to trial. They are settled out with a plea bargain. People have these plea bargains extorted from them with the prospect of very lengthy prison terms. It all is based on the fundamental mechanism of the informant. Informants historically have been used by corrupt regimes from late imperial Rome all the way through the contemporary communist regimes in North Korea and Cuba. They've always been looked upon with derision and hostility because people understand that snitches of this sort are in the business of setting up innocent people for punishment by the state. And unfortunately, we have a situation today where the FBI runs something in excess of 4,000 paid informants at any given time. And that's probably, I would be willing to bet, no more than a tenth of the number.
Hold that thought. Hold that thought right there.
Okay.
As the old saying goes, if you give a man a fish, you feed him for a day. But if you give him a Berkey system, you give him the ability to obtain purified water for a lifetime. This year, when giving Christmas gifts, instead of unwanted trinkets, give a meaningful and substantial gift. Berkey systems are ideal for every member of your family, especially the young ones in college. Unlike other water filtration systems, Berkey purifiers are portable. They require no plumbing, and the elements don't have to be replaced every 4 to 6 months. Perfect for anyone on a tight budget. And more importantly, if there's an unexpected emergency, your loved ones will be prepared. That's because Berkey systems are able to purify raw, untreated water. Check out our Christmas specials at BerkeyWater.com. With one of our quantity specials, you not only get a discount, but in one stop, you can get gifts for the entire family. That's BerkeyWater.com or call 888-803-4438. That's 888-803-4438.
don't mind that I'm getting older, but my wrinkles made me too nervous to smile. It was those fine lines that formed around my cheeks and mouth, and those crow's feet over by my eyes. People were starting to think I looked unhappy, but really I was just embarrassed by those wrinkles. Then I heard about a product called Tautinol. Tautinol is a serum that goes directly on the skin to support collagen and reduce the appearance of wrinkles. And it works. I'm not afraid to smile anymore. Now it's your turn. Today you can get a full bottle of Tautinol. You don't need a prescription, and you don't need surgery to reduce the appearance of those wrinkles. See what Tautinol can do for you and your confidence. It sure gave me something to smile about.
For your risk-free bottle of Tautinol, call 1-800-457-9914. That's 1-800-457-9914. Tautinol is the non-invasive way to reduce the appearance of wrinkles. Guaranteed. Call 1-800-457-9914. That's 1-800-457-9914.
It's a fact. Since the creation of the Federal Reserve in 1913, all banks in these United States create money out of thin air for every single loan they issue. With never-ending late fees, over-the-limit fees, and higher interest rates, it has become mathematically impossible to repay all debt, making all of us slaves to our creditors. The Federal Debt Relief System has created a successful attorney-backed program to legally eliminate credit card debt, personal loans, lines of credit, and other unsecured debts which have been fraudulently created by the banks. We can terminate your unsecured debt within 18 months with a much lower monthly payment, ending with nothing on your credit report. Join the thousands of Americans who now breathe with a sigh of relief because they have legally eliminated their debt. Instead of living each day in fear and frustration, it's time to take action and turn your life around. Call the Federal Debt Relief System at 877-943-8600. That's 877-943-8600. Or visit FDRS.org. Find out how you can break the cycle of debt slavery. Visit FDRS.org today.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here, and I guess that today is William Grigg, and we're talking about the FBI system of informants, which they do have, and of course they admit to 4,000. They probably have many more than that.
Yeah.
One of the most famous one was a man named Whitey Bulger, who was in Boston, and you know, they protected him, I think, for 20 years while he mm-hmm. was killing and torturing people to death. And whether it was 12 or 20 people who were killed, I don't know. But then the FBI agent in charge of the case warned him when the local authorities were going to close in on him, and Whitey Bulger has disappeared, the man he paid to execute people. And I've forgotten whether he killed, but it was somewhere between 12 and 20 people. I got off with 11 years in prison, 1 year for every person he admitted he killed, just so they could get him to testify in court. And isn't there something wrong with a system like that?
Well, Whitey Bulger, of course, is a fugitive right now. I suspect he ended up in Ireland along with another notable fugitive, the former president of Mexico, Carlos Salinas. He left for Ireland just after his term ended because his brother was wanted for arranging and conniving the murder of several political figures down in Mexico. For some reason, that seems to be a destination of choice for people of that sort, high-profile fugitives. The thing about Carlos Salinas, if you'll indulge me with a brief digression here, is that he sits on the board of Dow Jones, and so somehow he gets into New York City to sit on the board for regular meetings every year, in spite of the fact that there's an Interpol warrant out for him. So he's obviously got some friends in high places, as did Whitey Bulger. And Whitey Bulger not only had people killed and tortured, he also regularly, routinely, sexually molested underage girls, as did several of the people in his retinue. And according to his biography, I've read a couple of them actually, Whitey Bulger started out as an informant decades ago, working not only for local police in various ways, but when he was in prison back in the 1950s, he was apparently one of the first people involved in the MK Ultra projects by the CIA, and he was a guinea pig test subject for LSD, which was, of course, being described at the time as a potential cure for schizophrenia, although that was a cover story. The CIA helped, they basically cornered the market on LSD in the late 1940s, just after the CIA was created in the 1950s. They were going to use it as a psychotropic agent, supposedly to make people talk or to change their personalities so as to make them pliant and useful as assets of certain kinds for assassination and whatnot. But Whitey Bulger was a protected federal informant. And the local special agent in charge of the Boston office, I can't remember his name right now, had an arrangement with Whitey Bulger in which the two of them profited handsomely off their entente. Whitey Bulger would turn in a statistically impressive number of criminals from the various crime syndicates in Boston as he consolidated power over the underworld there in the Boston area. And at the same time, the special agent in charge who was running him as an informant was climbing the ladder in the FBI because he was racking up a huge, once again, statistically impressive number of convictions, although what they were doing was they were basically getting the low-hanging fruit, or they were winnowing out the less capable and adept gangsters and turning the Boston mob into a more fearsome and more efficient killing machine. And that's a really good example of what we're talking about here in terms of the mutual understanding that seems to unite certain members of the criminal underworld with the political criminal overworld. And this is a very common thing. I've mentioned that the FBI will own up to having 4,000 paid informants on its payroll. That was actually in a budget request that was submitted a couple of years ago. What we probably should assume here is that state and local law enforcement probably have at least 10 times that number of informants, or maybe a couple of multiples larger than that figure of informants who are working at various ways and various kinds. Usually, once again, with these task forces, whether you're talking about counter-narcotics task forces or joint terrorism task forces, of which there are 102 in the country, and there's something like 4,000, no, forgive me, I'm wrong, 2,000 federal officers who are tasked to the federal agents, the FBI agents, CIA agents as well, who are working with these joint terrorism task forces. And when they work for the JTTF, the Joint Terrorism Task Forces, the informants are almost always provocateurs. They're the people who actually go out and seduce borderline people into assembling these supposed terrorist plots that we hear so much about. The case that I wrote about on my blog a couple of days ago, it involves a really disgusting human being by the name of Jarrell Bray. And like most informants, he was a drug dealer. That's one of the biggest recruiting pools for paid informants or cooperating witnesses would be drug offenders of various kinds. He met a couple of years ago a 22-year-old single mother by the name of Geneva France. She had several small children. She was working for just barely better than minimum wage at a retirement home as a nurse attendant. And for some reason, she met this guy at the home of a friend. And her friend was dating this fellow, Bray. And Bray, for whatever reason, decided he wanted to date Geneva France, too. And by way of breaking the ice with her, he made some comment to the effect that if he cared to do so, he could abduct this woman and possibly abuse her in various ways, stuff her in the trunk of his car, and he could get away with it because he just had that much juice. Now, that's, of course, a very nice icebreaker, and it had the very healthy effect of repelling Geneva France from this person very effectively. And so when the guy asked Geneva out on a date, she very politely but firmly turned him down. A couple of weeks later, the police, in the early morning hours of a school day when Geneva was trying to get her daughters ready, knocked on her door, and she opened up the door to find the police there. They came barreling into her home, guns drawn, demanding to know where the drugs were. And she was, of course, quite puzzled. Why are you saying there are drugs in my apartment? Well, we don't have to tell you that. They couldn't find any. They didn't find so much as a molecule of evidence that she had anything to do with the drug trade, but she was arrested nonetheless and accused of being a courier for a drug syndicate in the Cleveland area. She went into court with the ingenuous belief that the justice system would vindicate her. She didn't know that the individual that she had jilted, this Jarrell Bray, had claimed to federal investigators that she had been involved in a transaction he had witnessed involving a small quantity of crack cocaine. So when she showed up for pretrial conference with the prosecutor, the federal prosecutor, she was told that she would have to accept a plea bargain arrangement involving a few years in prison, followed by probation and a confiscatory fine. And she said, I have no intention of signing that deal because I didn't do anything. So the case went to court, and as usually happens, the federal jury convicted her on the sole uncorroborated testimony of a drug dealer who was a paid informant for the DEA. She spent 16 months in prison. She worked for 16 cents an hour in the laundry and doing various janitorial chores in order to scrape together enough money to buy phone cards so she could call her three small daughters who were in the care of an aunt at the time. Finally, about a year and a half, a little more than a year and a half, after this whole thing began, Mr. Bray got involved in a melee in which he shot a man in the course of a drug deal gone bad. He was arrested and charged with assault with a firearm and attempted murder. And in the course of trying to make another deal with the prosecutors, he admitted that he had perjured himself when he had offered witness eyewitness testimony against against Geneva, France, and a number of other people. So he ended up going to prison for perjury. The DEA agent who was running him has faced no consequences or repercussions professionally, civilly, or criminally for the fact that he collaborated with, I would guess, that you'd have to say knowingly collaborated with this individual in framing these innocent people. Just a couple of weeks ago, 16 men who had been convicted on Jarrell Bray's word were released from prison. Geneva was released from prison last May. She was given $48 and a bus ticket home from Kentucky, where she was in prison. Not a word of apology, and to this day, the attorneys who were responsible for sending these innocent people to prison refused to admit their innocence. And once Geneva was reunited with her daughters, they had to find a new place to live because they had been evicted from her home while she was in prison. She has a 16-month lacuna on her work record she can't explain to employers, so she has a very difficult time finding a decent job. And all this was done because a liar for hire, a career criminal on the payroll of the DEA, was snubbed by Geneva when she was asked for a date. And so to get back at her, he dropped a dime on her and falsely accused her of drug trafficking. And that was enough to get this woman convicted, to have her lose her home, and to have her family disrupted in a way that the kids will probably never recover from. To this very day, anytime she leaves their sight, Geneva's daughters are convinced that she's going away for a long time. They are understandably horrified at the prospect of being separated from the mother again by the rough armed men who invaded the sanctuary of their home one morning in November 2005 on the word of a liar.
And, of course, for once again, we should remind our listeners that there are in America today 7 million Americans, over 2% of our population, are in prison, probation, or parole, and many of these people are innocent. They've been sent to prison unjustifiably. Prosecutors often routinely withhold information that the defense is entitled to. They violate the law by so doing. And when was the last time you heard of any prosecutor going to prison for violating the law and withholding information? And it just doesn't happen. They're more interested in convicting innocent people than they are in justice. And tragically, this is what happens when you have a nation that has lost its moral compass, where people do not fear God. What they want, of course, is to get another notch on their belt. They've got another conviction. They're a great prosecutor. They're going to get promoted. And they're never punished for violating the law and withholding information that would have exonerated innocent people.
Yeah, very much the case. It's the Mike Nifong syndrome, the fellow who presided over that farce at Duke University involving the lacrosse team. He's actually faced some professional consequences, I think, because he made such a conspicuous fool of himself. And had he not been so arrogant, so corrupt, and so clownishly overconfident about his ability to railroad those innocent guys to prison, I doubt he would have been subject to the professional sanctions he's experienced. There's a possibility he's going to have to pay large fines. He really should go to prison, obviously. I mean, anytime you abuse the justice system that way, you really should pay the penalty of imprisonment. And you mentioned the fact that prosecutors routinely withhold evidence. That's something that is actually facilitated by the alterations that have been made in the rules of evidence, the federal rules of evidence. Another thing that has happened is that the federal rules of evidence permit prosecutors to adduce to a defendant other charges that have not been validated against the defendant in the past. For instance, if you were suspected of a crime, but the prosecutor and the
hold
police...
Hold that thought. We're out of time. We'll be right back.
Elements are more powerful than any gravity filter element on the market.
These awesome elements are used in Berkey purification systems, and they can also be used to upgrade most other gravity filtration systems. They can purify raw, untreated water by removing pathogenic bacteria, cysts, parasites, trihalomethanes, and chemicals such as chlorine, atrazine, styrene, and MTBE. These elements also reduce unwanted heavy metals such as lead, mercury, mercury, and aluminum. Unbelievably, they even remove small microparticulate from water like food coloring particles. Yet, they leave in the nutritional minerals that your body needs. Moreover, because they are recleanable, black Berkey elements are more economical than the standard disposable elements, providing fresh, pure water for less than 2 cents per gallon.
Get a two-pack for only $99 or a four-pack for only $188 by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438. That's 888-803-4438 or order on the web at berkeywater.com.
Some people believe a group of wealthy men control political parties, the American media, and the wealth of our nation. Is this true? Dr. Stanley Monteith spent 40 years studying secret societies and subversive movements. He lived in Africa for 3 years, and when he returned home, he studied the writings of the men who shaped the modern world. His book, Brotherhood of Darkness, identifies the people who control the world and the organizations they created. Dr. Monteith exposes the movement behind Rhodes scholarships, the origin of the Council on Foreign Relations, and the myths surrounding communism. He discusses the goal of all covert organizations, so if you read Brotherhood of Darkness, you will learn a secret that has been passed down through the centuries. When you learn this secret, you will understand what the future holds and what you must do to help preserve our nation. Call and order your copy. 877-300-7645. Only $12.95. That's 877-300-7695.
This is Elizabeth Border, author of the two-book set, America Attacked and Chaos and Chemtrails. I wrote these books because I believe that every American should have the vital chemtrails research info. I was much heartened and encouraged when a radio listener recently wrote me, quote, "You are truly a great writer, so clear and powerful and thorough in your communication. You have the strength to forge ahead in the midst of darkness, and you also believe in the power of goodness and truth. I hope you listeners will order these crucial books. Send your check for $32 post-paid to Radio Liberty, P.O. Box 969, Soquel, S-O-Q-U-E-L, California, 95073. $32 to Radio Liberty, Box 969, Soquel, California, 95073. Or call 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927.
Hi, this is Brother Michael Diamond. You can now get the most important package ever on what has happened to the Catholic Church in the last 50 years. Find out how this massive crisis concerning the Catholic Church happened, what happened, and how the Bible predicted it would take place in the last days. The package contains 6 DVDs that contain 10 different programs, 2 books that combined are over 1,000 pages and other information. Order now at our website, mostholyfamilymonastery.com. That's mostholyfamilymonastery.com. The last word monastery is spelled M-O-N-A-S-T-E-R-Y. Or call us at 1-800-275-1126. That's 1-800-275-1126. Or mail in your order to us at 4425 Schneider Road, Fillmore, New York, 14735. The total cost for this massive package of information is only $10, $15 for UPS Ground, or $30 outside the U.S.
About our criminal justice system and the injustice of it and how they're using paid informants. And when you're getting somebody paid to lie, and the man is a liar to begin with, why would you be surprised that he would lie in court and send innocent people to prison? And, of course, what about our prosecutors who are violating the law by withholding evidence that they are required, or at least traditionally have been required, to show to the defense evidence that would show that the accused was really innocent? Why are they so interested in sending innocent people to prison? But that seems to be what the federal prosecution is really all about. Go right ahead, William.
Yeah, I'd mentioned how the rules of evidence have been modified in ways that are almost guaranteed to ensure that innocent people will go to prison, or at least face conviction and punishment of some kind for crimes they didn't commit. Rule 404B of the rules of evidence, I'd started to discuss that before we had to go to commercial, essentially nullifies the double jeopardy, the ban on double jeopardy, the guarantee that you cannot face prosecution twice once you've been acquitted of a certain set of crimes, because that section of the rule of evidence permits trial prosecutors to introduce evidence relating to, and I quote now, other crimes, wrongs, or acts for which the defendant has not been convicted or even criminally charged. For instance, if you're a suspect in a crime, the police investigate you and develop a raw investigative file describing their suspicions that you've been involved in a crime, and the prosecutor examines the evidence and decides not to charge you, that's still kept on file. And if at a later time you find yourself being prosecuted on a federal drug charge, under that rule of evidence, a federal prosecutor can go back to that raw file and introduce that into evidence at your criminal trial for a separate charge, and use this to prejudice the jury against you. Now, this is done according to that section of the rule of evidence, that section, or rather, Rule 404B, once again, to, quote, prove motive, opportunity, intent, preparation, plan, knowledge, identity, or absence of mistake or accident behind an alleged crime. What that can do, in effect, if the case against you is weak, say it's based on, once again, the uncorroborated word of a paid informant, that's the case that the prosecution has for a given accusation against you, they can go back into your file and find all this other material and use that to create an impression in the mind of a jury that you must be a bad guy. You may not have been guilty of this crime, but you've certainly been guilty of something. So you end up effectively facing trial for a charge that simply didn't hold water, or if you had been prosecuted once and acquitted of a crime, you face a second trial, in effect, for the crime for which you had been exonerated in the first trial. And you end up in a situation where you'll either be compelled to make a plea bargain and go to prison for something you didn't do, or you may be before a federal jury, and federal juries are notoriously susceptible to the will of prosecutors, and you'll end up going to prison. And the only evidence against you is the word of this paid informant, buttressed with these provisions of the federal rules of evidence that really tilt the playing field in favor of the prosecutor. There's a former federal attorney by the name of Andrew White, who's now become a defense attorney, and I'm trying to figure out if he's doing this by way of penance for being a federal prosecutor, or if he's simply cashing in on his earlier investment by making money off of the problem that he helped create. I don't know what his motive is, but he has a very interesting take on that particular rule of evidence. He reflects on the fact that, quote, when I was a prosecutor, I had a defendant who was previously charged with a drug dealing crime in which he was found not guilty. Not only was I allowed to introduce evidence relating to that crime, I was also able to prevent the jury from hearing about the acquittal. So in other words, he was able to commit an offense referred to in some of the more esoteric sections of the criminal code as misprison of perjury. He was able effectively to lie about the fact that this man had been acquitted for this earlier crime. He described the allegations against this individual and left the impression in the jury's mind that this individual had been previously convicted on this offense, and used that to get another conviction against somebody who was probably innocent of the charges against him. That's just a typical day at the office for your federal prosecutor.
I think we're in real trouble because, when, of course, you can't get a fair trial in this country, and in many instances you can't. Now, sometimes you can, but many times you can't, and if the federal government's out to get you, they'll get you. And not only that, but you may very well be tried by a state court and exonerated, and then, of course, they'll come back and they'll take you to court under the federal charges for exactly the same crime. And they say, well, you see, it's not double jeopardy, because, of course, one was under state law and this is under federal law, so it's perfectly all right. They are circumventing the intent of our founding fathers. And where's the outcry? Where's the outcry from our political or our church leaders? We'll be back in just a moment with our good friend William Gregg right here at Genesis.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
The war on terrorism, will it be fought overseas or will it affect us here at home? If you are like most folks, you want to be prepared, but can't afford an underground shelter. So what do you do? Did you know that you can use your home as a shelter against fallout and biological or chemical attacks? With a little know-how, it's not that difficult. Sheltering in place, surviving acts of terrorism from biological, chemical, and radioactive fallout, developed by Wayne LeBaron, a health physicist who has served as a specialist in environmental health, communicable diseases, and has worked as a nuclear specialist for the U.S. government, gives you easy-to-follow video instructions and walks you step-by-step through the process of preparing your home as a shelter. Get this critical video every American needs for only $29 plus shipping. Order by calling New Millennium today at 888-803-4438. That's 888-803-4438. Or order on the web at BerkeyWater.com.
This is George Whitehurst Berry of the Genesis Communications Network. Have you ever wanted the truth about the economy? Crash, Are You Ready? Is the fastest growing program on GCN. Our one-hour program airs weekdays, Monday through Friday, from 10 to 11 a.m. Central Time, just after the Power Hour and just before Alex Jones. To listen to rebroadcast 24 and 7, visit our website at www.hearitonline.com and click on the appropriate link. Our unparalleled guest lineup has included patriots such as Congressman Ron Paul, Scott Ritter, former UN Chief Weapons Inspector Murray Neal, inventor of the revolutionary dragonskin body armor, and Philip Torme, USS Liberty survivor. We also focus on alternative health and survival topics. Go to www.hearitonline.com. That's HEARITONLINE.com.
Since the year 2000, earthquakes, heat waves, droughts, tsunamis, floods, fires, and hurricanes have killed over 1 million people worldwide and forced tens of millions to go without food and water. After Katrina, the media was eager to show victims in New Orleans begging for food. If a disaster strikes you and your loved ones and you have no stored food, you'll be begging as well. Now our economy is slipping into an abyss that even Donald Trump says will make the Great Depression look like a Sunday picnic. The U.S. dollar is worth less today than it was even last week. Before food prices skyrocket, trucks stop running and stores close their doors, Survival Enterprises can help you prepare. They're master distributors of Mountain House freeze-dried food with up to a 50-year shelf life. Survival Enterprises has real butter, cheese, and bread, real beef, chicken, and turkey, all canned for long-term storage. For their website and more info, call 1-800-753-1981. That's 1-800-753-1981. And remember, if you wait until you need us, it's too late. Call now.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at the Genesis Communication Network. Our guest is William Grigg. And before we go on, William, would you tell our listeners how they can get your blog spot and how they can get your information?
The easiest way to do that would be to go to the web page maintained at the right source. The URL, the address for that is www.rightsourceonline.com. That's one word, rightsourceonline.com. And if you go to that page and scroll down about a third of the way down the page, looking at the left-hand border of the screen, you'll see my photograph, and next to my photograph will be a link to my blog, which is called Pro Libertate. That is a Latin phrase that means for freedom. I update it between 3 and 5 times a week. Generally speaking, I will try to publish a 1,200 to 1,500-word essay of investigative polemics. It's an opinion piece. I don't hide or disguise my views of what's going on, but I try to substantiate what I say in a way that involves getting under the surface of stories a little bit more diligently than most commentators will. And hopefully what I'll have to say on these subjects will be both infuriating and useful, and hopefully it'll motivate people to do something, because I certainly don't want people to be paralyzed with a sense of doom over what's happening, although we have to admit the reality that encompasses us is pretty grim. Also, at the Right Source website, there's a banner ad at the top of the screen that is where people can go if they want to order my new book, which is entitled Liberty in Eclipse, The War on Terror and the Rise of the Homeland Security State. It's about 320 pages long with endnotes rather an index. And it goes into some depth describing in more detail what's going on with respect to this transformation of what had been a free republic into a militarized, centralized garrison state. And what we're confronting right now is the reality that where we used to have a locally accountable, decentralized law enforcement system with sheriffs primarily, but also local police accountable to the communities in which they lived, enforcing laws that were intended to protect the persons and property of the law-abiding, what we now have is essentially a centralized, militarized homeland security apparatus in which the local police are actually the local affiliates of this centrally directed homeland security state, and that security state is presided over an executive that is something akin to an elected dictator who, at his sole discretion, can imprison any of us, arrange for any of us to be tortured, to have us deprived of all due process or legal recourse for as long as he sees fit to do so, or to have us summarily killed in the interests of homeland security. The logic of the homeland security state is that the people who are supposedly protected by the government are the enemy that has to be regimented, scrutinized, and kept under the heel of the Leviathan. And so that's what I describe in this book. The reason I chose the title Liberty and Eclipse is to convey a sense of sort of beleaguered optimism, because an eclipse is a temporary phenomenon. It's a dark and somewhat scary experience, but hopefully it will pass. And I hope that people who are exposed to what's going on and who take the time to read what's happening in detail and read at the end of the book where we present some things that people can do tangibly to start fighting back, that together we can do something about mitigating the circumstances we're in, and God willing, to recover at least some element of the liberty that is being stolen from us.
And now, when am I going to be able to get some of those books? Because we would love to carry them here.
I'm going to make proper arrangements with the publisher to make sure that you get a quantity of those books. As a matter of fact, as soon as we're done today, I'm going to get in contact with the good folks at the Welch Foundation to make sure that you get a quantity to start selling to your listeners.
Thank you very much. We'll really appreciate it. And I think this is such an important subject. And, of course, we even have a four-tape set of our own called the Military Commission Act. And you need to understand out there in the audience that everything is in place for the establishment of a military dictatorship in America. And much of it has to do with the Military Commission Act, the John Warner Defense Appropriation Act, and, of course, the later presidential directives for the Homeland Security and National Security that allow the president at any time, at his discretion, without the permission of Congress, for an indefinite period of time to establish a dictatorship in America. So pick the story up from there. Let's get back to our informants. Why do they want informants, and why are they actually encouraging the postmen and the firemen and others to report things that would be suspicious, not about terrorists, but about American citizens?
Well, to answer your last question first, it's important to recognize that this Homeland Security apparatus is in the business of carrying out a policy based on what Dick Cheney called the 1% doctrine. And the 1% doctrine dictates that if there is just 1% of a chance, just a 1% chance that somewhere somebody is involved in terrorism, then we should devote our resources 100% of the time on the assumption that there's a 100% likelihood, there's a certainty that we're facing terrorism. And that is a monumentally wrong-headed way to conduct foreign policy, but with respect to law enforcement, that is exactly the opposite of how we should proceed under the canons of law that exist in the Constitutional Republic. And so what happens is that in order to create this sense of certainty that somebody is plotting to commit an act of terrorism, the government has to enlist the services of all these disreputable people and the criminal demimonde who become paid informants. And they also have to enlist the services of people who appear to be innocuous and helpful and completely removed from law enforcement, who have the confidence of the people in order to get into their lives and find out if there's any justification for an enforcement action against them, which is why the Department of Homeland Security, for instance, has been enlisting firemen who conduct safety checks or fire inspections or perhaps check your carbon monoxide detector or smoke alarm, to get them into the homes and to have them act as the eyes and ears of the Homeland Security apparatus to see if there's any evidence that the dwellers within a particular habitation are discontent with the government. That was literally in the directive that was handed down for the training of firemen, of all the apparently unlikely people in a northeastern city, through a joint terrorism task force. And so if they find evidence that somebody doesn't like his government, he has, for instance, literature that suggests that the government is a criminal syndicate engaged in a war against the rights of the people. In other words, he's reading my blog and printing out the essays. If somebody is in the possession of this type of anti-government contraband, then that would be reported to the Joint Terrorism Task Force, and the Joint Terrorism Task Force would probably set in motion an investigation of that person. If they can find some actionable reason to describe that person as a terrorist, what they will probably do is they'll either haul him in and try to intimidate him, or they will create an informant for the purpose of suborning an action that could be called a material step in the direction of a terrorist conspiracy. There is a horrifying story in the current issue of Rolling Stone magazine, and once again, that strikes me as a very unlikely source for this type of splendid investigative journalism, called The Fear Factory, and it describes in detail how these 102 task forces go about manufacturing terrorist plots. We know the some of the litany. There's the Lackawanna Six, there's the Seas of David case. The Seas of David so-called conspirators just recently were acquitted by one jury, and the federal government is going to have a trial on a different set of charges to try to get these people thrown into prison. The jury acquitted them, saying obviously what happened is that you had a paid FBI informant go in and create this little cabal, the supposed cabal of mentally unremarkable people who really had no intention of carrying out a terrorist act, but the FBI informant basically created the act and orchestrated and choreographed the whole thing. The words orchestrated and choreographed were in the verdict acquitting the Seas of David defendants. And then there's the so-called Fort Dix conspiracy. It's the same deal where you had a guy who had been selling incense on the streets of Brooklyn being run as an FBI provocateur, not just an informant, but a provocateur to organize this supposed plot to attack Fort Dix, which would be a really stupid thing to do if you're going to commit a terrorist act. Why would you choose a heavily fortified military installation as your target? Assuming, of course, that you don't have a weapon of mass destruction of some kind. But one case that's described in great detail is the case of this fellow, Derek Sharif, in Rockford, Illinois. And he was caught on video saying all these incendiary things about wanting to tear down the government. Well, he was doing this as he was prompted by a cooperating source by the name of William Chrisman, who was, guess what, a former crack dealer who had been convicted on attempted robbery, and he was paid $8,500 by the Joint Terrorism Task Force out of Rockford, Illinois, specifically to set up this guy who made a couple of $100 a week at a video rental store in Rockford, Illinois. And so you have this individual in prison now as a supposed terrorist. The Rolling Stones piece really is fascinating because it gets into the mindset of the people who were involved in the Joint Terrorism Task Forces. And they do have this mindset that what they do is so important that the details of it must be kept from the public at all costs. We have to simply take their word for the claim that we are constantly under siege by these domestic terror cells that work on behalf of our international enemies, that there is no accusation so facially ludicrous that it shouldn't be investigated, no suspicion so tenuous that it shouldn't be used as a basis of rousting somebody and subjecting him to the scrutiny of the government, and if there's even the faint reflected shadow of a vague possibility of a hint that terrorism might be involved, they should proceed as if there were a 100% certainty of the same, and that people are simply too hung up on their constitutional rights. That's another thing that becomes something of a leitmotif in these cases, where they start talking about the idea that we should understand that we're on a war footing. There's actually an FBI agent who says that the FBI is on a war footing, and two-thirds of their budget, the FBI has a budget of $4 billion on the books. It's probably a larger budget than that off the books. But two-thirds of their budget is devoted to this type of activity within the United States, and we simply have to confide in their wisdom and their competence in order to prevail against this unspecified and apparently ubiquitous enemy. One of the quotes here from a member of a joint terrorism task force, a special agent of the FBI by the name of Mark Lundgren, is the following. These terrorism acts are trending toward the homegrown, self-activated, self-radicalized, the sort of thing that could literally pop up in your backyard. The typical things we would use to detect terrorism don't work because these people are off the charts, so to speak. 9 times out of 10 for the next decade is going to be the local cop who stops the terror attacks, which, of course, would be true if we actually had local police. They're actually very good at disrupting all kinds of criminal activity, including terrorism. But once again, we don't have local police. The logic of the war on terrorism, the logic of Homeland Security is to decentralize everything under the control of Washington, which means that it's not only wrong-headed and corrupt, it's also very inefficient. And it's interesting as well that some of the people that the Joint Terrorism Task Forces are developing as cooperating informants and provocateurs are really making a very attractive living at this. They're becoming the, for lack of a better way of putting it, sort of the Johnny Appleseed of Johnny Appleseeds of jihad. or jihad appleseed, if you will. I mean, they're going around the country and infiltrating or infesting communities of Muslims in this country, most of them unassuming and not particularly interested in politics or extremists in terms of their religious views. And they're creating, at the behest of the FBI, these supposed conspiracies as a way of catalyzing prosecutions of people who probably had no criminal intent at all whatsoever. I mentioned this fellow, Chrisman, who was involved in this supposed terror plot in Rockford, Illinois. He was the guy who orchestrated the whole thing and set up this poor schlep who was just a video store clerk. He did the same thing in San Diego. And in the case of San Diego, the whole thing fell apart because the guy who was targeted by the FBI made a point of throwing this guy out physically out of his home, saying, "I want no part of this. I just don't want to have anything to do with you, and you know, why are you trying to force yourself upon me?" But once again, there are thousands, probably tens of thousands of people who are out there doing their level best to confect these supposed threats for the purpose, I believe, of expanding the power of the government and keeping the population at least somewhat receptive to the idea that we simply have to forego our constitutional rights and our due process guarantees, and where necessary, to set people up either as showpiece defendants or for political retribution. And it's going to become a lot more common, as this FBI Special Agent Lundgren said. In the future, we're going to see them focusing more and more intently on what they call homegrown terrorism and radicalism. There's a measure that was just passed by the Senate to set up, or passed by the Congress and signed into law by Bush, to set up a federal commission to investigate homegrown radicalism. And so we know which way the market is trending in terms of these invented prosecutions of innocent people. It's trending toward identifying domestic political extremists as an enemy that needs to be taken care of in the way that we're describing here.
Chris, what they're really doing is trying to create fear in the American people. And since there really is no real threat of terrorism, if there were, they would have closed the southern border and had certainly agents, marshals on every airplane. They know there's no threat, but they've got to have something to tell the American people. So they use the agent provocateurs. The American people are going to have to be frightened to death to be willing to give up their freedom, and I fear that many of them really are, because they never stop and ask, where is the evidence that there's this real threat of terrorism? And if there is, why haven't there been any terrorist attacks in over 6 years, going on 7 years?
Well, one of the things that I point out in the first chapter of my book is that you are statistically more likely to die at the hands of a police officer than you are to die at the hands of a terrorist. It's very uncommon for American citizens to die at the hands of police officers. It's becoming more common for them to be tased or otherwise traumatized, but to die at the hands of a police officer is still a very rare thing, but it's statistically a much larger possibility than that you would die at the hands of a foreign terrorist. You're actually likelier to die from an allergic reaction to peanuts than you are to die from a terrorist attack. We're dealing with a threat that is statistically negligible. As a matter of fact, it would have to be inflated dramatically in order to be as large as negligible. But on the basis of this contrived fear in the minds of the public, we're seeing the steady and escalating transformation of our country into a prison society. We take a look at the way we're treated in an airport. That's the way that people are treated when they're going into a prison. I went to Fort Leavenworth twice as a musical performer, and I had to go through almost exactly the same procedure in order to get into Leavenworth and to get out of Leavenworth that you have to go through in order to get onto an airplane. That says a great deal. I mean, one of the things that is a signal right of the Anglo-Saxon tradition is the freedom to travel. It was specifically guaranteed in the Magna Carta, as, of course, was habeas corpus. This is a right of great antiquity. And yet we see that it's impossible to get on an airplane without being treated as a criminal suspect. It's going to become impossible to leave the country and reenter the country without having travel papers. Because of real ID, we're going to have a national ID card that would be our driver's license. I wholeheartedly suspect that within a year, year and a half, if you're stopped by a police officer in a state that is part of the real ID system and you're from an enlightened state such as Montana where they don't have the real ID system, you'll be arrested for driving without a valid license. They're going to use that leverage as a way of compelling all the states to accept the real ID system so that they can keep us under constant scrutiny and track our movements. These are the attributes of a prison system. People aren't paying adequate attention to this. My hope is that as the illusion of prosperity dissipates, that people will be exposed to the crude reality, not only of our financial situation, but our situation with respect to individual liberties.
Well, I agree with you, and I share your concern. And I think that even though I abhor the thought of the collapse of our economy and the destruction of our currency, perhaps it can be a blessing in disguise that we will have people who have lost their affluence and will suddenly begin asking, how did it come about? And there's going to be people like you and me there and many of our listeners who understand what this is all about. It's all about bringing about a new world order, a new world religion, a world dictatorship, and, of course, the new world leader. William, thank you so very much for being with us. It's always a pleasure. Look forward to talking to you again, well, I guess tomorrow evening. Bye-bye.
More than 700 chemicals have been found in our drinking water. And did you know that you can have greater exposure to these chemicals by taking hot showers than when you drink the water? That's because many chemicals are inhaled when they evaporate, and others are absorbed through the skin. The KDF shower filter is designed to reduce chlorine, lead, mercury, and iron, and it inhibits the growth of bacteria, mold, algae, and fungus in your shower. The media is non-toxic, environmentally sound, and is recyclable. The KDF shower filter will typically last 10,000 gallons or 1 year, whichever comes first. Hospitals, restaurants, and water treatment facilities use this media to reduce chlorine, iron, heavy metals, and bacteria. What about you? Order your KDF shower filter, normally $49, for our special price of only $35, a $14 savings. Call now to order at 1-888-803-4438. Order today and save $14 by calling 1-888-803-4438.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll-free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
The Healing Formula is an all-natural wound care formula developed mainly for the treatment of pressure sores, also called bed sores. The Healing Formula was developed by a home caregiver with over 30 years' experience. We use the finest ingredients available, including organic aloe vera gel and 35% hydrogen peroxide. The Healing Formula works from the inside out, oxygenating the affected area, stopping the spread of infection, decreasing pain, while promoting healing. The Healing Formula has also proved effective in other areas, such as abrasions, cuts, burns, and rashes. There are over 6,000 peer-published documents on the ingredients in this healing bed sore formula, with not one adverse reaction reported when used properly. The Healing Formula comes with an unconditional money-back guarantee if you are not completely satisfied. We offer a free sample to all nursing homes, home caregivers, nurses, and anyone with a non-healing wound. Please visit our website at healingformula.com or call 800-357-2944. That's 800-357-2944.
Communication Network, and Sydney, we want to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and we depend upon those of you out there in the listening audience who believe, as I do, that we're involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. If you agree with us, we do hope that if you're able to, why you'll be willing to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters and help us as we finance what we do 5 hours a day, and we have about 60 outlets every week. Some of them are half an hour a week. Some of them are every single day. A lot of them are every day, but we need to reach as many people as we can in the time that's allotted to us. So our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. Talk to Mary there and ask her about joining the Radio Liberty family. Then let me suggest the four-tape or four-CD set, the Military Commission Act, because it's very important you understand that everything is in place for the establishment of a dictatorship in what was once the land of the free and the home of the brave. And then, of course, we will have very, very soon a DVD available called The Planned Police State. I'll have that out probably within 2 weeks and a syllabus that goes with that. And then, of course, we will have three great new tape sets. One is on the Bilderbergers. And, of course, we also carry the DVD by Alex Jones, Endgame. They're both available from Radio Liberty. And then, of course, we have two books on the Bilderbergers. One is called The Bilderbergers by David Estulin. The other is called Bilderberger Diary by James Tucker, who is the man who has been tracking the Bilderbergers for, I guess, 25 years or more, goes to all of their meetings and writes a fascinating book, Bilderberger Diary. Then if you want to get into the occult activities of members of the Bilderberger group, you need to get the four-tape or four-CD set, Satanic Crimes, and we have a book by that title as well. Then, of course, we've got lots of parallel groups. We've got the Bohemian Grove. We've got a great four-tape set on that, and we've got a video on that as well, also done by Alex Jones. And there you'll actually see the ceremonies and the owl and where they have the feigned, at least we assume it's feigned, human sacrifice. We have a four-tape set on Skull and Bones and a number of books on Skull and Bones. We even have a syllabus that has the names of all of the members of Skull and Bones up to 1986, I believe it is. It actually comes from Skull and Bones. We're not supposed to have it, but of course we want you to know who these people are who hate America, whose dedication, of course, is to the Nazi concept, because you go to the Skull and Bones, there are all sorts of occult symbols and swastikas there, but you must understand, Skull and Bones antedated the Nazis. The Nazis got their swastika from the occult, the same occult forces that Skull and Bones got there. And believe me, the loyalty of members of Skull and Bones is not to America, but to this Skull and Bones oath that they took when they joined, an oath to Lucifer. And if you have any question about that, you go to WilliamHKennedy.com. That's WilliamHKennedy.com. And there you can see a video replication of an actual Skull and Bones ceremony where the members, some of them became presidents of the United States, I might add, kneel down and worship and swear an oath of allegiance to Lucifer. Because this truly is a spiritual battle. That's WilliamHKennedy.com, and there's an actual video there that was filmed at great danger to the man who took it, of the initiation ceremony. And the fact you're not going to hear this mentioned by Tim Russert or the others simply reflects the degree of control that exists today over what the American people think. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we hope you'll go to our website of RadioLiberty.com, that you want to get the items I mentioned, the Military Commission Act, the four-tape set on the Bohemian Grove, or on the Bilderbergers, or on Skull and Bones. And we've got two other great new website sets. One of them is called Weather Modification. The other is called Spy Chips. These are four-tape and four-CD sets. And then pray for America, but pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection.
More than 700 chemicals have been found in our drinking water. And did you know that you can have greater exposure to these chemicals by taking hot showers than when you drink the water? That's because many chemicals are inhaled when they evaporate, and others are absorbed through the skin. The KDF shower filter is designed to reduce chlorine, lead, mercury, and iron, and it inhibits the growth of bacteria, mold, algae, and fungus in your shower. The media is non-toxic, environmentally sound, and is recyclable. The KDF shower filter will typically last 10,000 gallons or 1 year, whichever comes first. Hospitals, restaurants, and water treatment facilities use this media to reduce chlorine, iron, heavy metals, and bacteria. What about you? Order your KDF shower filter, normally $49, for our special price of only $35, a $14 savings. Call now to order at 1-888-803-4438. Order today and save $14.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views and the views of our guests. And, of course, for this next hour, it's going to be Joel Skousen from World Affairs Brief. And there are so many things that are going on today that really need to be analyzed. And fortunately, Joel does that. He comes out with a World Affairs Brief report on a weekly basis. And I get it. I read it through carefully. And, of course, I have the advantage of talking to Joel about it right here on Genesis. So, Joel, what are we going to be talking about today?
Well, we're going to be talking about one of the greatest illusions that people suffer under, and that's the media presentation of political candidates for office. You know, this is a closed political club, Dr. Stan, and we are seeing before us the attempt by two outsiders, Representative Ron Paul and Mitt Romney, trying to break into the club. Now, they're worlds apart. Mitt Romney is trying his very best to be a complete establishment clone, and yet they're still fighting tooth and nail to keep him from being elected. And, of course, Ron Paul is anathema to them because he is the only one who really understands the issues out there, and he's very dangerous to their agenda. That's why they've been snubbing him so fiercely, especially in this last debate. It was just criminal to see how the moderators continued to put off Ron Paul with promises that they'd come back to him with more questions, and they never do. And, so, but he did get in his licks, and he got in some huge applause from the audience. But still it appears that, you know, more so than even I, as a political skeptic, have realized over the years how much the American public is so willfully dependent upon the media presentation of who a front runner is and how effective they can be at changing people's opinion. You know, we live viewing a political circus, and it's amazing, if not agonizing, to watch this show. First of all, we saw Rudy Giuliani, the establishment's pre-election favorite, of course only because the media said so. He went from front-runner status to a disastrous showing in the primaries, garnering less votes than Representative Ron Paul, who was systematically denied any media coverage. So either the public is fickle or the media polls are just plain lying, Dr. Stan. Perhaps both.
Well, I certainly know that the media is lying, and then I really believe that a lot of people, you know, when the media is telling you Giuliani is, you know, is the leader, they honestly believe it, even though they can't stand him. I mean, who'd want to vote for a president, you know, a man who's a regular cross-dresser and has such, you know, a terrible, terrible record of immorality, and certainly wife after wife, and moves in with a gay couple while in between marriages, and supports the homosexual agenda. This is certainly not the man I would want to have for a president. And I will say one thing, and I think to the credit of the American people, at least they wouldn't buy the massive campaign by the media to convince us that the country's mayor should be the country's president. So I'm encouraged that at least there's some people out there with good judgment. Although when it comes to John McCain, I begin to wonder, do they really have that sort of that good judgment?
Well, this is a very good example of how they realized they tried to sell the American people a lemon in Giuliani, and so they can easily rebound by presenting someone who's a little bit less worse appearing and get them to completely buy it. It's very similar to what I have warned people who are concerned about, you know, throwing the Raskas out and making wholesale changes in the government. You look back in 1992 at the example in Italy, where the entire government and all the major political parties were overthrown and thrown out of office. In one fell swoop, everybody went down because they were involved in bribery with the mafia and other people. They were back in office within 6 months with new names.
Hold that
new
thought.
Party.
Hold that thought right there. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay. Our guest this afternoon is Joel Skousen from World Affairs Brief. who is the writer of that and, of course, supervises the website. And if you don't go to World Affairs Brief website every day, why, you really don't know what's going on in the world. But if you are dependent upon reading your local newspaper, let me tell you, these papers, you know, represent freedom of the press. In other words, if you own the press, you have the freedom to suppress whatever stories you want to, and you'll get the stories on World Affairs Brief that are being suppressed by the controlled media in the United States, controlled by five mega corporations that control 90 to 95% of the major media. Well, Joel was simply talking about the election and, of course, how they tried to sell the American people Giuliani, and, of course, the American people wouldn't buy him. So in an effort to defeat Mitt Romney, who, of course, is, although not a member of the establishment, is doing everything he can to garner their favor, why, of course, they're pushing pushing John McCain at the present time, and never once mentioning that many of the prisoners of war who served with him, you know, were in the prisons in North Vietnam, hate McCain because, of course, he went over, he helped the enemy, and, of course, then during the hearings in Washington, D.C. in 1991-92 on POWs, he did everything to make sure that the prisoners of war who were still there would never come back, and that the records of the imprisonment, the fact that the communists were still holding Americans, that those records were never released to the public or to the family. So pick the story up there, Joel.
Well, you know, this is all too true about John McCain, and he really has never been very popular in Republican circles. He even attempted to get the Democrats to accept him as a vice presidential candidate to John Kerry. So this is, you know, a person who is Republican, mainstream conservatives that are still very skeptical of. You know, when we saw John McCain with almost no support suddenly rise to front runner status after a barrage of big name newspaper and personality endorsements that had no reason to rationale other than someone behind the scenes was making a lot of calls in the night to change the political landscape. The establishment boost for McCain is still going on in a very big way, especially surrounding the Florida primary. They're trying to knock out the candidacy of Mitt Romney and Ron Paul by the end of Super Tuesday. Even more so, they're trying to garner McCain enough delegate votes so that there is no bartering that needs to be made. So that
Hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment. Well, this is Arthur Stan, and of course Joel was saying how the establishment, the people who really run America and run both political parties, is certainly doing everything they can to make sure that John McCain, who many people feel is a Manchurian candidate, and I even have a clipping out of Newsweek magazine where McCain was asked 4 years ago why he was running for the presidency, and his reply was, well, because Angela Lansbury turned over the Queen of Diamonds. Referring, of course, to the movie, The Manchurian Candidate. We have the pages of Newsweek magazine where that's exactly what John McCain said. Maybe he was just being funny. But under any circumstances, why, of course, I'm going to let Joel go ahead and explain why the people want John McCain, who's not really that much different than Hillary Clinton as far as his views, or Obama. I mean, they're both liberal. Oh, McCain pretends to be a pro-life, but that's about the only thing you can say for him. I don't know how he really feels, but it plays pretty well down there where he comes from.
Well, John McCain has a tremendous amount of baggage behind him, and there are a lot of veterans that are against him. He has a terrible temper. He has alienated almost everyone around him except these people who are endorsing him. Of course, you know, I view anyone who comes out on these major public endorsements of McCain is very much tied to the establishment. It's been a very interesting read because even people like Ann Coulter, who's generally a neocon cheerleader for Bush and his foreign policy, can't stand McCain, and the fact that she isn't out there pounding the drum for McCain indicates that she's kind of an ignorant follower of the neocon agenda. I mean, she considers herself a true conservative, but isn't obviously tied into the neocons or she'd be supporting McCain. I mean, there is none of the establishment that's supporting Romney. In fact, they're uniformly against him. And the issue is, you know, it's so interesting, Dr. Sandy. would be explainable if he were taking positions even somewhat close to Ron Paul, somewhat different than the establishment. He is in bed with the establishment in terms of his position, but he's basically an outsider trying to get inside, and this is a closed club. You don't invite yourself in, no matter how much money you have. It doesn't help Romney that he's a very religious person. They don't want anybody who's got principles or religion. They might see something if they got inside. The real reason why they're pushing McCain is because Giuliani went down in flames, and they did not want the election, the Republican election, to accrue to Romney by default as being in second place. So they had to all of a sudden boost McCain up to the front runner position, and they have pulled out all of the stops. Dr. Stan, let me run down through kind of a litany of these endorsements, which has really truly built the bandwagon for John McCain. The kingmakers had their hands full, frankly, trying to turn a pig's ear into a silk purse with John McCain. John Broder in the New York Times wrote, Mr. McCain has delighted in sticking his thumb in the eye of mainstream Republicans throughout his entire political career and is now accumulating a base of support among party regulars who see him as the strongest election candidate in the remaining Republican field. Now, that's disinformation. That's not the reason the party regulars are backing McCain. McCain's support comes almost exclusively from the same insiders who were promoting Giuliani. They just switched teams to McCain when someone gave them the signal that Giuliani wasn't going to make it. But too many corruption scandals revealed, and more were on the way. He was just a skeleton waiting to jump out of the closet. They didn't make sure Romney didn't accrue those remaining reciprocal Republican support that would, if they had left a vacuum there.
I think what they're really worried about is that a lot of the conservatives are going to jump the party if McCain is the candidate, and you've got a choice between McCain and Hillary. Why a lot of conservatives, and maybe even a few Christians who are smart enough to realize they've been misled by their leaders, will jump the party. I got an email from Gary Bauer today, and for those who don't know, Gary Bauer is a spokesman for the New Conservatives, posing as a Christian leader. But of course, he sends emails and faxes regularly to Christians across America, literally tens of thousands of them. But anyway, I got the questionnaire today, what do you think about John McCain? Isn't he a great guy? But if you have a choice between McCain and Clinton, what would you do? Would you vote for McCain? Would you vote for Clinton? Would you vote for a third-party candidate? And what they want to know, that's what it was really all about. Would you vote for a third-party candidate? And I will tell you, of course, if I have a choice between McCain and Clinton, I'm voting third-party. Even though I'd hate to see Hillary in, I'd even hate more to see McCain in, because he would do exactly what George Bush has done, and that is neutralize the Republican Party, and there would be no opposition to the establishment's program of creating a new world order, a new world religion, and certainly a new world leader.
Well, he's George Bush on steroids.
Right.
In terms of his, he's got the military background to claim that I can be a real commander-in-chief, and he'll go throttling through the world on an aggression streak that'll make George Bush look like a piker. And and this is one of the main points why they don't want, of course they don't want Ron Paul, who's absolutely against intervention. They don't want Mitt Romney, who, is backing the war. In fact, it's been a very interesting psychological trick to really push Romney into a corner about claiming that he was for a timed withdrawal, because it made him come out in such hard, purposely doing this, in case he wins, they want to make him go on record supporting this war so much that he can't be backed out of it if he should get cold feet or want to be less than aggressive. It's amazing how they work these little angles, playing both sides. What if Romney does win, like Reagan won without their assent? How do we control him once he gets into an office? And I'm convinced, though, we're headed for a setup for World War III, and they don't want anyone in there but someone who can rally the troops in a false flow of patriotism to get us into a new world order through this World War III that's coming in the next decade. Now, I don't pretend, Dr. Stan, to know who's making these calls. through the six newspapers that came out unanimously for Bush, for McCain, just right before the Iowa and New Hampshire primaries. I mean, this was uncanny in its timing. It's uncanny and actually too good to be true that, in fact, that there were no other candidates that were endorsed. None. None for Giuliani. I mean, how would that happen? And then you have the endorsement of the New York Times coming out for McCain. You have the endorsement of, near endorsement of Huckabee. I mean, he was like his running mate in Florida. He was always praising McCain, what a wonderful person he was. It was very clear to me that Huckabee was playing the spoiler role in the Florida primary. All of the difference between McCain and Romney was explained by the counties that Romney lost, that Huckabee had a major percentage of the evangelicals that would not have gone for McCain, would have gone for Romney had not Huckabee been there. And so he was basically playing as a sidekick of McCain in the spoiler role, while all of the major establishment people were bringing in the vote in South Florida, which is more liberal. Now, let me just say that the two key endorsements that I think swung a great deal of middle of the road and left or liberal Republicans to was the endorsement of pro-homosexual Republican Governor Charlie Crist. In fact, there's quite a few gay sites that openly say that Charlie Crist is gay. Anyway, he endorsed McCain. Surprisingly, McCain didn't know this was coming. So obviously somebody else was whispering in Crist's ear that this is what we want. His endorsement came a mere 24 hours after Senator Mel Martinez, who is the Latino senator from the Orlando area, recent chair, and that's why Orlando, I think, went 50-50 between McCain and Romney, because of Martinez's influence there. He is, of course, the recent chair of the Republican National Committee. He helped sway thousands of Cuban American votes in South Florida to McCain. If anyone's endorsement represents the Republican establishment, it certainly is Martinez. Now, in my analysis, it's almost a given that any major political figure that endorses McCain, he or she has to have deep ties with those who control our political process. McCain is only liked within the club. Includes recent endorsements by John Danforth, Howard Baker, Representative Jack Kemp. Then you have Giuliani, of course, finishing only 14% in the Florida vote. Still, he flew out to California just to make a big media splash by endorsing McCain. Topping off the list of endorsements today was the endorsement of Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger, who's now called the Terminator of Romney. You know, ever since Schwarzenegger's meeting with Lord Rothschild and the Bilderbergers in 2005, he's been acting more the globalist than the conservative governor he was elected to be. Of course, he never really was conservative. He was positioned to take that position. But it's interesting, going back to Huckabee in Florida, he said very clearly that even with only 13%, he's going to stay in the race till the end, he said. Now, I suspect that he's being played along by the establishment for a possible vice presidential slot. They're kind of promising that, if he'll stay in the race in order to draw votes away from Romney. And they will be funneling money sufficient for him to do stay in the race. He will be essential, especially, towards making sure on the Super Tuesday, which you have six southern states voting in there, that the southern states don't vote for Romney. So this is a very careful manipulation of the electoral process.
And, of course, they're masters at the seat. They know exactly how to do it. They've been doing it for the better part of a century. In fact, we even cover that in a four-tape set we have called A Secret Government, and that's the four-tape set on secret societies and how they, they've run candidates for both the Republican and the Democratic positions going back into before the turn of the last century. So, and as Professor Quigley, who is Bill Clinton's mentor, said on page 1247, 1248 of his book, we're going to have, two parties that are about the same, but then every 4 years, people can go to the polls and throw the rascals out, and nothing will change. Page 1247 and 1248, Tragedy and Hope. Go right ahead, Joel.
Okay, well, You know, one of the strange things, though, you know, talking about the Romney candidacy, no matter how much he bends over backwards to toe the establishment line, the establishment doesn't want him. It's not only because he's a Mormon. It's the fact that he came into this race totally invited, having the money to stay on top, and I really don't like that. There's also the conspiracy issue. As I said last week, the powers that be have conspired to bring a new world war upon us during the next decade. It will drive us into a new world order, and they want to make sure it's run by one of their own. But what's strange to me, however, is why Romney's not spending any money on TV ads in the upcoming primaries. He's got the money, but he's not spending any. He's not committing to any TV ads, even in California. He's getting, of course, a lot of free publicity, but much of that is negative. Perhaps he realizes it won't do any good. He can't obviously miss the fact that the establishment seems dead set against him. They keep even talking about opening Romney the candidate that everybody wants to hate. Well, the media steamrollers are obviously going to throw this vote to McCain. Perhaps he's saving his money for later. But if Super Tuesday fails to produce the major wins for Romney other than Utah, where he's a slam dunk, there may be no later for Romney. What one can draw from all of this, Dr. Stan, is that the American public is very much manipulated by the media perceptions of who is the front runner, who is losing steam, or who's not going to win. You know, they've tagged Ron Paul with that last label incessantly to make sure he doesn't win. It's kind of like a self-fulfilling prophecy. Meanwhile, rumors are circulating that the establishment wants the president's brother, Jeb Bush, to be McCain's VP. And I think that's very true. He's apparently very well-liked in Florida, very popular governor, and the Bush dynasty may not yet be behind us.
Wouldn't that be something? We got Jeb Bush as vice president, and then John McCain has an accident, or maybe, well, Chris, you remember, of course, the young man who shot Ronald Reagan. What are the chances are that he would be the son of a close friend of the Bush families? I mean, what are the possibilities of that when George Herbert Walker Bush was the vice president and the fellow, what was his name, Hinckley, who shot the...
Right.
Yeah, was a close friend.
The parents were close friends with George Bush.
I mean, what are the chances of that just happening by accident?
Yeah. Well, you know, he had all of the symptoms of being a mind-controlled assassin. When you have people go underneath mind control training with the CIA, they disappear for a couple of years. He disappeared for 2 years. He only made one appearance that could be documented. His parents didn't know where he was. None of his friends know. But he showed up at a psychiatrist to get an evaluation several months before the assassination. And that was to provide his insanity defense for his cover. Sirhan Sirhan disappeared and nobody could trace him for a couple of years before he pulled off the assassination. Of course, he wasn't really the only assassin. There were multiple shooters there, as well as one documented case that there was a .38 bullet fired in the Hinckley assassination of Ronald Reagan. So there was another shooter there as well, because he was firing a .22.
And, of course, everybody's forgotten that Ted Kaczynski, the mad bomber, the serial bomber, was actually in a CIA program at Harvard University, where, of course, they got him in, they indoctrinated him, they destroyed his sense of morals, and they just wanted to see what would happen when they played with his mind, and they did. And then we got a Ted Kaczynski. There's not one person in 1,000 in America who knows that story.
Yeah.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Go right ahead. Our guest is Joel Skousen from World Affairs Brief. Go ahead, Joel.
You know, the CIA also spent a lot of time developing people to go into the media as well. You know, we have, reporter? Oh, Jack Anderson. Jack Anderson, after he got home from a missionary tour, disappeared for 2 years. And even under court testimony, he refused to reveal where he had been for those 2 years. Turns out, another investigation, that he was in China for 2 years and came back and suddenly got a job with Drew Pearson and became a hatchet man for all of the CIA targets for overthrow, including Somoza. He was the one who helped destroy Somoza's reputation so that he could be overthrown and the public wouldn't object, just like Christopher Matthews used to play that role for the New York Times. Drew Pearson was one of those hatchet men. They were obviously getting their sources from inside the government. But this is very typical of CI people. Even Cooper Anderson, who moderated the debate, it's come out now that he had a stint in the CIA. He claimed that he decided not to join after his internship. But who knows?
And, of course, I would simply point to a book called Fixing Intelligence by Lieutenant General William Odom, who headed the NSA, the most secret of all secret organizations. And he's a good American. He headed it for a number of years. He wrote a book, Fixing Intelligence, where he can't tell you what he knows, but he could ask questions. And one of them was, should the CIA have people planted as journalists in the American media? So, I mean, I don't think there's any question. Of course they have them, and they're influencing and controlling what the American people think. That the book, again, Fixing Intelligence, by William Odom.
Well, you know, it's very clear that the CIA is very deeply involved with controlled leaks that go to journalists. Every time I read about one of these stories about the government decrying one of the leaks the journalists have and printed in the New York Times, whether it's Daniel Ellsberg and the Pentagon Papers, the government monitors all the telephones of all journalists in the United States. There's no way that anybody could be telephoning these people, whether it's on their cell phone or at their office phone, and giving them leaks and information without the government knowing about it. And so I have to really wonder what are they up to when they're trying to continue this front. Well, obviously, it's to make the American people think that, in fact, there are patriotic individuals trying to blow the whistle on the government. There may well be, but those are the type of people that get thrown out as whistleblowers. The ones that are permitted to continue to leak year after year are the ones that are authorized by government to leak.
Well, of course, Daniel Ellsberg, one of the most famous ones, of course, was a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. When he leaked the Pentagon Papers, it was time to come home, to bring our boys home. I mean, we were never going to win the war. They were fighting over there as a diversion to keep our attention away from what was transpiring in America while we went into the Great Society and we took God and prayer out of our schools and legalized pornography. And of course, all those things were accomplished, the Roe versus Wade abortion decision by the Supreme Court. And afterward, they had transformed America. There was time to come home. And Daniel Ellsberg suddenly, member of the Council on Foreign Relations, suddenly finds the Pentagon Papers, releases them, violates every law. And did he ever go to court? Was he ever put in prison? Of course not. He was part of the establishment. He was playing his part.
Well, of course, the real purpose of the no-win Vietnam War, I believe, we look at the contrast between the Iraq War, where you have all this knee-jerk patriotism being designed by the government. You have all of these ribbon stickers, support our troops. We never did any of that during Vietnam. You know, those ribbon stickers come from military families. They're passed out to these people. It's a very strong government program with several other private spin-offs to try to support give a pro-war mentality to Americans. And they did just the opposite during the Vietnam War. They wanted to denigrate war. And the difference is this. The Vietnam War was the last war of defense of the world, the falling dominoes of communism. And that was very unpopular with the left. The left was pro-Soviet, pro-Chinese, pro-communism. And the government did not want that kind of war. So they poisoned the American people against that kind of war, through purposely losing it in Vietnam.
And intentionally, it was a no-win war. Our boys were never allowed to win. They could fight and bleed and suffer and die, but never win. And all you need to do is read the rules of engagement to realize, of course, that Robert McNamara, who's deeply involved in the occult, engineered that. He was the Secretary of Defense. And, of course, between he and Lyndon Johnson, they made sure that our men would never have an opportunity of being victorious any more than we're being allowed to be victorious in either Iraq or Afghanistan today. And if you doubt that, you got to get my December newsletter. It'll be posted in just a few days. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest, Joel Skousen of World Affairs Brief. Go right ahead, Joel.
Well, switching topics, talk about Attorney General Mukasey on waterboarding. Mukasey reminds me more and more of the iconic scarecrow Michael Chertoff of Homeland Security every day. He's got that shifty-eyed look at the chronic fibber. Mukasey was at his worst weaving and dodging over whether or not waterboarding was torture. And as William Katz reported, before the Senate Judiciary Committee, Chair Patrick Leahy insisted that waterboarding has been recognized as torture for the last 500 years, though it has been practiced since the Spanish Inquisition in the 1400s. Mukasey told senators that he was not sure it really was torture. Senator Kennedy's taking a more direct approach asked Mukasey, would waterboarding be torture if it was done to you? He answered flatly, I would feel it was. But then insisted his words did not constitute a legal opinion.
Now, here's the Attorney General of the Attorney General of the United States can't give a legal opinion.
I mean, this is incredible. It's like saying, Kennedy responded, it's like saying you're opposed to stealing but aren't sure if bank robbery would qualify. What a great statement. For once in my life, I found something to laugh about and applaud in a statement by this otherwise reprehensible senator. Mukasey also declined to say whether the United States government had previously used waterboarding. I am not authorized, he said, to talk about what the CIA has done in the past. I mean, this is for a congressional committee. He's investigating that very purpose. They don't have a right to know if the CIA has been waterboarding. Even Monday, John Negroponte, CIA chief from 2005 to 2007, appeared to confirm its use when he said it had been made illegal and had not been used since, indicating that it had been used before. It's also a lie that it had been, that it was not illegal. Now, the new Attorney General contradicted Negroponte and said that waterboarding was not clearly illegal and suggested it could be used against terrorism suspects once again if requested by the White House. Now, where did he come up with that? This is because of the fine print in the wording of the McCain anti-torture legislation. In the fine print, it gives the president the ability to override this anti-torture when it's in the need of the nation.
There's so much for John McCain, the great patriot.
I mean, he purposely went out of his way to proclaim to be the champion of anti-torture so that all the media would look to him for his approval when this big compromise legislation came up that the president said he would sign, and John McCain said, this is good.
Hold that thought, we'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Joel was just pointing out that there was an anti-torture piece of legislation that was put forward by John McCain, which nobody read, because in the fine print it said, you know, torture would be illegal and waterboarding would be illegal, unless, of course, it was authorized by the president to protect our country, and that was in small print. Well, be that as it may, we'll get back to that in just a moment, but before we go on, I want Joel to tell our listeners how they can get a copy of the World Affairs Brief, and of course to recommend to you the website World Affairs Brief, which you can go to for absolutely nothing, which I go to every day after I do my emails. Great information, the information that you need to read to stay abreast of what's going on, and these are the stories that the major media will not print because, of course, they are controlled and they don't want the American people really to understand the betrayal of our nation, the betrayal of morality, the betrayal of Christianity and everything wholesome and good in the world. So go ahead, Joel. How can people get a copy of the World Affairs Brief?
Well, they can get a sample copy by emailing me at editor@worldaffairsbrief.com. That's editor@worldaffairsbrief.com. And if they forget that, they can go to the website, and it tells them how to do that right on the front page where I give a summary of the current World Affairs Brief. My briefings have a unique point of view. As you know, Dr. Stan, I'm the only one who holds a comprehensive general theory that explains cohesively why the establishment of the United States has helped and fomented communism over the years. The traditional conservative view has been that it's because we were infiltrated with a bunch of communists in the State Department. In fact, that was true. But what is unknown to most conservatives is those communists were protected from being fired by globalists above them who had an agenda for fomenting communism. And my theory, which is outlined in the piece called Strategic Threats of the Coming Decade, indicates what I believe the Anglo-American establishment is up to relative to the New World Order, the larger conspiracy, if you will, that explains much of what's going on around our world in warmongering, the phony war on terror, the phony war to spread democracy around the world, justifying the intervention. All of that is explained in a major piece that I wrote. So I encourage your listeners to go there. And much other material that's free for reading from the archives, especially the most interesting section, I believe, is the research and writing I've done on dozens of cover-ups of the United States government. That's the biggest evidence that there is a comprehensive conspiracy against liberty in the United States. It's the fact that our government keeps covering up all of the evidence when wrongdoing occurs, which means they have something to hide.
Amen to that. All right, fine. So, go right ahead.
Going back to the subject, you know, of the waterboarding, nothing is more symptomatic of evil in government that pretends to be conservative than protecting wrongdoing. Protecting evil and keeping that out of the courts and keeping it away from Congress. You know, not that this Congress would really do anything about it. I believe both the Democrats and the administration witnesses are going through the motions because the public expects people, and the Democrats are expected to defend against torture, but they never really will because they're part of the problem. I mean, look at Senator Feingold. He's part of the problem. Senator Leahy's part of the problem. Senator Kennedy's certainly been part of the problem over the years. These are not the, I mean, even on the Republican side, of course, Arlen Specter has been a known conspirator since the JFK assassination days. He's a United States Senator, and he continues to play the role of attacking the Bush administration, and then he always gives in at the end and agrees with them. So this is very interesting. You have to be fairly cynical and skeptical to be able to see through the wolves posing in sheep's clothing before us. You know, Marty Letterman writes, relative to this torture thing, Senator Feingold asked Mukasey when he would share with the committee, even in closed session, the legal explanation of why the CIA techniques were not unlawful. Mukasey's response, he won't, because it's classified. That is to say, the scope and application of this federal law is so secret that not even the legislators who enacted it can be permitted to understand it. Isn't that incredible?
Well, the whole thing is incredible. In fact, I would ask our listening audience, has your minister ever spoken out against the torture carried out by your government on helpless prisoners, both in Iraq and at Guantanamo? And if they haven't, why haven't they? Why won't the minister speak out for righteousness and against evil? And I don't think there's anything more evil than torture. I mean, we criticize the Catholic Church for the Inquisition and torturing people, and then we do the same thing today. And nobody speaks out. The silence is deafening. Go right ahead, Joel.
Well, you know, the audaciousness of this performance is mind-boggling. So is the spinelessness of Congress to take this kind of abuse without impeaching the president. There's good reason to do so, only for his unconstitutional signing statements. After signing the National Defense Authorization Bill Act of 2008, Bush inserted in a signing statement that four sections of the bill unconstitutionally infringe on his powers, and so the executive branch is not bound to obey them.
Then why does he sign it? Why doesn't he veto if it's unconstitutional?
Exactly. That's the appropriate rule. There is no legal justification, except there's precedent about the president's doing, and Congress let him get away with it. Congress is still letting him in. He should be hauled before the Congress for impeachment. You cannot say, when Congress specifically passes the law banning the use of Iraqi war funding to fund any permanent military base in Iraq, which the administration clearly intended to do, and then they refuse to abide by it, you should impeach the president.
But I think, of course, the major thing is, Joel, that the American people must understand, we went into Iraq intentionally so we could keep our troops there indefinitely, and so we would have American troops stationed in Iraq, you know, for the foreseeable future. And they can't tell the American people that. They're just going to find out one day, and that's why we have our troops stationed there permanently, just like they're permanently stationed in Germany, and they're permanently stationed in Japan, they're permanently stationed in South Korea. Why are they there? Why? Because we won the war, and we control those countries. And certainly when you have troops stationed in your nation, why, the government, your government, is going to be very careful not to offend the government that has troops stationed in your nation. They're all subsidiaries. They're all certainly subservient to America, and the average American has no idea about this American empire that we've created.
Well, in addition to that, I think the American troops are positioned in particular in the Middle East to serve as further provocation, because the goal is to antagonize the Muslim world, to continue to make our occupation there a sore point, a thorn in their side, if you will, to continue to provoke unrest and conflict, because it's out of conflict this Third World War will eventually erupt, of which Russia and China will attempt to take down the bully of the world, and we're handing them the justification to that.
And of course, we'll be at war with the Muslim world, we'll be at war with China and Russia, and the American people can't see this. It should be so obvious. We're doing everything we can to antagonize Russia, to antagonize China, to antagonize the Muslim world, and that we'll have billions of people aligned against us.
Well, the reason they don't see it is that the media always has ready excuses for everything that they do. There are often two versions of everything, and the uncomfortable version Americans are reluctant to accept, because obviously it would cause them to have to do something about it, and they don't want to have to break away, and indeed very few people can break away and fight these battles, as you and I are doing, even verbally. This leads me to my next topic, which is the media's very interesting move to begin to explain away Russia's growing hostility toward the United States. A typical example is Paul Richter of the LA Times saying, growing friction between the United States and Russia over Iran is only part of an increasing difficult relationship that many diplomats and experts consider to be in its worst shape since the end of the Cold War. Although U.S. officials are publicly playing down the rising tension, and that's very part of the system, too, is to continue to play like Russia is our ally, to not alarm the American people as to the growing war preparations of Russia. And I continue to quote, a series of conflicts has prompted some within the Bush administration to conclude that for domestic and geopolitical reasons, Russia is now more comfortable with the U.S. as an enemy than an ally. Well, they never really were considering. The Russians never considered us an ally. They were only playing us for the fool. But this is part of the Russian plan to slowly getting its people accustomed to a future war with the U.S. by building tension and portraying, sometimes correctly, the U.S. role of the bully of the world, pushing its weight around. Continuing the L.A. Times article, he says, the government of Vladimir Putin, flush with petrodollars and increasingly aggressive on foreign policy, has challenged the Bush administration on a wide range of issues in the past few months. While U.S. officials badly need Russian help in the Middle East and elsewhere, I mean, this is typical disinformation on the part of the L.A. Times. You know, that's one of the reasonable excuses. We can't antagonize the Russians because we need their help in the Middle East. Well, what have the Russians ever done to help us in the Middle East? You know, they have helped us get into the quagmire of Afghanistan so that they can laugh at us going through what they went through. They, of course, are not really helping with Iran. They're instigating instigating trouble in Iran, as they did in Iraq, and watching the U.S. government go in and militarily build a reputation for itself.
Well, not only that, but they're providing all sorts of sophisticated weapons for Iran that can be used against Americans, American planes, American missiles. You know, why, you know, would we be still financing Russia today when Russia is building up Iran, which we're told, of course, is the center of world terrorism? In fact, this last week, there was an article about the fact that we are still paying Soviet scientists, going back to about 1990, 1991, when the Berlin Wall came down or when Gorbachev fell, and we're employing them so that they won't sell their services to, you know, to other countries. So we're hiring all of these scientists in Russia today. Why can't Russia hire the scientists? Why do we have to funnel massive amounts of money into Russia to hire their scientists so they won't sell their expertise to other countries?
especially with Russia being flush with petrodollars now, et cetera.
And not only that, but of course, if you study what's going on, we're still under one guise or another giving several billion dollars a year to Russia, when Russia has reserves of about $440 billion in reserves, and we have to borrow $2.5 billion every day to pay our bills. Why are we still funneling money into Russia? Doesn't make sense.
Well, it only makes sense in the fact that we are building the best enemy money can buy, in order to quote the famous Dr. Stan Monteith.
Well, of course, that was really the phrase that came from Professor Sutton, but since he's not here, I'll take full credit for it.
Well, you know, the Russian view to their people is we were weak and stabbed in the back by the U.S. and betrayed, and now we're back, we're strong. And, the administration talks this away as if they just want to view like, this is actually Russian dialectic, communist dialectic, use of creative conflict, and we're seeing it play out, and the Russians are falling for it. The hatred of America is growing by leaps and bounds. The popularity of the Communist Party has returned. This is very much on script. You know, one of the most greatest and egregious cover-ups, of course, is the fact that there are many MIA and POWs that were taken for mind control experiences into Russia and China. Everybody wanted their share of the prisoners. And none of those prisoners were ever repatriated, even though the U.S. knew about it. General Jan Senja of Czechoslovakia defected and told about all of the prisoners that were being tortured and put under drug and mind control. And he was tracking all of the transcripts and the records. He even got to interview some of the Americans, even though he couldn't go to where the... this was the first... real live witness that the Russians had American prisoners of war that they were experimenting on for mental experience. And those people have either died now or gone away. They're gone. The United States Congress has never demanded an accounting of that, or the administration. Kissinger has always denied these things, even though he knows about it. Even two, the Secretary of Defense admitted that we left POWs in Laos when left the Vietnam War, and Kissinger came out and denied it, and the Senate didn't do anything more about it. If Kissinger denied it, that's good enough for us. These are true treasonous acts, Dr. Stan, and someone's going to pay in the justice. Thank goodness that there will be justice someday for all of this. It may not be till after this earth life, but there will be justice.
Well, of course, it may not be in this world, but it may be in the next one. But I wouldn't want to be in Henry Kissinger's shoes when he stands before the bar of justice, the eternal bar of justice.
You know, the more I learned about Congress, the more I'm just shocked that it's not just incompetence, it's just outright corruption. Here's a typical example of Congress doing the bidding of lobbyists while creating huge unintended consequences. Then they try to later fix it and bungle that, too. Kansas City Star aired the story about experienced airline pilots in the U.S. being forced by the FAA to retire at age 60. And this was really done at the instigation of the airline pilots union, who wanted to make new jobs by pushing the seniors out of work. So what happens is, when the FAA issued this regulation, all of the pilots over 60 were laid off or permanently fired by the forced to retire by the commercial air carriers. But international pilots up to age 65 could fly through U.S. airspace, and we couldn't, said the pilots. You know, that didn't make sense. If it's not safe for us, why is it safe for any of the other carriers? So in December, Congress overturned the FAA ruling, bringing the U.S. in line with the international rules that said 65 is the mandatory age. Now, you would think, Dr. Stan, that they would allow all the pilots to go back to the airlines, having been improperly fired. Not so. The new language in the law essentially prevents them from doing what they did before, because it stipulates that these pilots, about 3,000 of them, who were involuntarily retired, are prohibited from being rehired at their same seniority level. I mean, if you're, incredibly, Dr. Stan, this won't shock you, but you know what the title of the bill was?
What is it?
The Fair Treatment of Experienced Pilots Act.
Of course, it reminds me of the IRS simplification. The Tax Law Simplification Act makes things more expensive. You know, the one that wants to do away with the subsidies for the very rich, of course, you know, actually gives the wealthy people more tax breaks. You can always tell what the legislation is. Read the title and then you go 180 degrees to the opposite. Well, we've got about 30 seconds to wrap up the program here for this segment, but don't go off because we have an additional 3 minutes after this.
You know, if that weren't bad enough, the new law specifically barred the pilots from taking their case to court.
They've lost their right to appeal this to the courts?
That's right. You know, you give immunity to the telecoms for spying, but you take away the right of the pilots to go to court over this.
Well, there are a lot of things going on that really don't make sense. And, of course, what we have to do is get the American people to understand that there's a reason. And if it isn't logical, then there's another reason. There's some other force out there. We're going to be back in just a moment to wrap up today's program here at Radio Liberty. Well, Joel, we got 3 minutes for you to wrap up the program.
Well, glad to be of help, Dr. Stan. I know you spend a lot of time on the radio every day, and nice to help take the load off if I can.
I really appreciate it, believe me.
Well, you know, on the economy, just a few notes here. You know, the big trillion-dollar secret is not the subprime thing. That's just really the trigger. There's really a $100 trillion derivative threat hanging over this nation. That's the secret out in front of everybody. The banking industry wants to make sure investors don't notice. Even according to the comptroller of the currency, the derivatives are estimated to be $180 trillion, not just $100, $180 trillion. And to put this in perspective, the U.S. GDP for the third quarter was about $11 trillion. So we're playing with a game with a pool of fictional money that's 16 times bigger than the economy. Now, how does it get that big? Basically, a derivative are bets that people make on movements of markets and money, and anything can be put into derivatives. And you don't have to put up the trillions that you're betting on. You simply place bets, and they never come due until you lose the bet. So these are just incredibly leveraged hedges that banks and everyone has dealt in, and it's coming home to roost. MBIA, you know, the bankrupt bond insurer, had to write down $3.5 billion in souring credit derivatives in the fourth quarter alone. And there's a lot more exposure there from other banks, and much of this is not being reported because there is no reporting requirement for derivatives.
Well, I always remember what Warren Buffett said. He said, derivatives are financial weapons of mass destruction. Currently latent, but potentially lethal. Well, that potentially has come to pass, and this certainly it could totally destroy the financial system of the West, because it's not just simply the Americans. I mean, they've got derivatives all throughout the world. I mean, they're talking, you know, in other countries probably far more than we have here. Heaven help us when this all comes cascading down.
Well, as I said, I think they'll keep it afloat till war comes, and then they'll wipe all that debt off the books.
And of course,
our nation will be destroyed in this war.
And along with that will become the destruction of the savings and the pension funds of the everything that the average American has spent his whole life working for. We're out of time. Our guest has been Joel Skousen from World Affairs Brief. Joel, thank you so very much. We'll look forward to talking to you again tomorrow.
My pleasure, Dr. Stan.
God bless. Bye-bye. All right, and we're going to be back here in just a moment to wrap up today's program. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time I need to remind you that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and if you'd be interested in joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters and becoming part of the Radio Liberty family, why, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. If you want to verify that quotation we used earlier from Professor Carol Quigley, we carry his long-suppressed book, because this book was suppressed. Macmillan was bought up by another publisher, and they destroyed the plates in the first half of Professor Quigley's book. Professor Quigley taught at Harvard and Princeton before he went to Georgetown and became the mentor to his most famous student, William Jefferson Clinton, who actually mentioned Professor Quigley a number of times as his mentor. Well, if Tragedy and Hope, The History of the World in Our Time, you'll find the quotation about, how we're going to have let the people throw the rascals out every 4 years, but nothing will change because the same foreign and domestic policies will continue. That's pages 1247 and 1248. We also have a tape set called The Secret Government, and one of the tape sets in there is called Secret Societies, and it will take you into the background of how they've controlled the elections going all the way back to the mid-1930s. Financing of Communism, covered very well in my pamphlet, available from Radio Liberty, called The Communist-Capitalist Alliance. The Communist-Capitalist Alliance, a phrase used by Solzhenitsyn when he talked to the AFL-CIO in 1975. His speech, of course, was totally eliminated from the controlled media. Nobody ever read it, but of course we quoted in the pamphlet and a great deal of other information. The book going into, of course, the background of how we actually had financed the communists, the Wall Street, and the Bolshevik Revolution. And believe me, from the very inception of communism was financed, and it's still being financed today. Doesn't make any sense. We financed them during the Vietnam War, when, of course, they were actually financing the North Vietnamese, who were financing the Viet Cong, who were killing our boys in the rice paddies and villages of South Vietnam. We have, of course, my December newsletter. You can go up on our website of RadioLiberty.com. You'll want to read that December newsletter, because it is basically the speech that was given by Lieutenant General Ricardo Sanchez, who commanded the coalition forces in Iraq from June of 2003 to June of 2004, and he lays it all out. We're fighting a no-win war over in Iraq. We're not allowed to win there. And then, of course, you'll want to, of course, get the book Betrayed. It's written by our good friend Joe Douglas, but it will tell you all about the men we abandoned in the Second World War, and then, of course, in Korea, and then in Vietnam, and they were taken, many of them, to Russia to be experimented on, and our leaders knew about that. We wanted to find out how Americans would stand up under torture, and we worked very closely with the communists all this time, but we can't let the American people know that our leaders would betray our troops. If you doubt that they don't experiment on them, we have the Rockefeller Committee report. It's available from Radio Liberty by calling 1-800-544-8927. Came out of the United States Senate in 1994. It tells how they've experimented on hundreds of thousands of American troops without their knowledge and consent. I mean, they're used as human guinea pigs, just as they're being used as human guinea pigs today. So the book Betrayed by Joe Douglas is so important. It's the story of the men we abandoned in the wars. And, of course, we have this verified by a government report, came out of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. It's called POWs and MIAs. It's not that expensive. You need to get it put out by the staff of the Foreign Relations Committee over the signature of Senator Helms. We can't let the American people know. We can't let those boys we're sending overseas to fight and bleed and suffer and die understand that, of course, if they're captured, chances are they'll be betrayed by people like Henry Kissinger, who said of our men in the book The Final Days by Woodward and Bernstein, they're simply stupid, dumb animals to be used for foreign policy purposes. That's what Henry Kissinger said about our fighting men. Stupid, dumb animals. But remember, he represents Rockefeller, the Rockefeller interests that have a different agenda because they worship a different God. Please pray for Radio Liberty.
Yeah. You're listening to the Global Star Radio Network, located at Telstar 5 KU band, frequency 11836, symbol rate 20770. Thank you for listening.
News on the Information Radio Network. I'm Greg Moore. The Commerce Department says consumer spending edged up just 0.2% in December. At the same time, the Labor Department reports unemployment soared last week, although the jump is in part being blamed on technical difficulties adjusting the figures around the Martin Luther King Jr. holiday. Voting in the Senate could begin as early as today on dueling economic aid proposals, as senators are rushing to add jobless benefits and